And if you hold judgments within yourself, you know, that pedestalization that we come from in Mormonism is often, you know, for somebody else's benefit, and but not actually for our own.
Yeah.
We're not actually able to engage with humanity in an empathetic, loving way.
Not only with others, but your sense of self, like that you're also able to find pleasure and find beauty and find magic within your relationship with yourself. So you 5 or 6 years ago would have seen a very broken individual, but a very obedient and quiet individual.
What is the worst thing regarding sexuality you were taught in the church? Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast. My name is Kara Burrell. Sometimes I go by Nuanto, and sometimes I'm just a girl who spent 30 years in Mormonism, 15 years married, have 3 kids, and want to talk to other people who have spent about the same amount of time in Mormonism and have some ideas about how to like sex better and why sex is still so hard to talk about for so many of us. So for this very special 2-part episode series of Mormon History Hoedown, I brought on my good friend Faith Erickson.
Thank you for having me.
I first met Faith about 2 years ago when she did a Mormon Stories episode with Margie DeLynn about something that she was thriving with and, you know, just kind of this post-Mormon journey of how you rediscover yourself, your sexuality, and just this holistic framework and picture of how to go about the world. Faith, tell us a little bit what we're going to jump into in part 2.
Okay. In this episode, we're kind of going to go through defining and navigating within our own sexual experience. But I think that how do I like sex is how do you enjoy pleasure, whether or not you're welcoming another partner into that. I think that the broader conversation is a healthy one to be had when you're coming out of an understanding of sex after a high demand religion.
So sex, it's a thing that people do. Sometimes people use it for procreation. Sometimes they like to rub things together that feel good. I've heard things, they're positive, they're negative. But overall, I hear it's kind of a taboo subject. Last night on my Instagram, I asked my followers, especially the ladies, to write in. I got topics all around sexual shame and deconstruction and reclaiming your sexual identity and autonomy. Got all those subjects on my brain. I answered a few on my Instagram last night. And as we go throughout this discussion, I'm interested to hear your framework, Faith, of how you have, you know, moved through this space, what tools you and adaptations and perceptions and judgments and all of those things that you've kind of been able to tweak and understand and show up as the confident person you are today, and then get into the nitty gritty of answering some of these questions.
Let's do it. I'm excited.
Okay, great. And also I'm super duper excited to announce that yes, not only did I start a 501c3 nonprofit, the Nuance Hug Foundation, to be able to podcast long-term and do community building events, done a few of those, but I also want to be able to do big epic things like once a year. So I announced that I am doing a big trip to Greece with ex-Mormons, a group trip to Athens and Santorini. We spend 7 days and traveling around, seeing all of the ruins and the sites, eating amazing food. So I worked really, really hard on this itinerary. So if this sounds interesting to you, there are payment plans. If it's something within your budget and you've worked hard and now you want to connect with new people in a fun place, August 26th through September 1st, spending 7 days. I have a link down below where you can sign up. You can read more. You can email me if you have any questions. So if the trip to Greece is a little bit out of your budget, but you're like, I'll keep listening and be convinced. The price is like, no, that's a little bit too much. That too much portion that goes to the nonprofit bank account. I have 24 spots. I have a few filled up right now. And if I can fill all 24 of those spots, I am not kidding. I can literally fund this entire operation of the nonprofit and then some. Everything for like 5 months. So I hope that helps clear up that. And now you're all like, obviously we're coming because it supports the podcast and I get to go eat Greek food for 7 days with Kara and a bunch of new friends. Sorry, we're going to start with just the basics.
Let's go really. Basic.
So somebody asks, how do you heal your relationship with sex and intimacy after being shamed religiously for it your entire life?
I think that that is very hard to answer that in a basic way, because anytime anyone's ever asked me about how to do the sex, I always say the way to do that is not going to be easy. It's going to be creating your own definition by establishing your own authority within your sexual definition. So when you say, how do you heal? It's because you have to do the work. You have to put in the time to establish what your true north is, what your compass is, what your moral piece is, what you want to dictate and navigate your sexual experience based on. Once you have that established, then that's the way you move forward. And you pace yourself and you take time and you don't shame yourself. And you take time to define what sex is by yourself before you define what sex is with your partner. Yes, you've been having sex with your husband for a myriad of years, but you kind of have to find what your own personality is, define what your own sex identity is, and then work with one another to figure out what that sex language is between the two of you. Mm-hmm. The sex identity of my husband and I is its own thing, is its own entity. Yes, there's different flavors and degrees and whatever, but you create a language together. So make sure you understand what you're speaking about when you're speaking about yourself. And I think that consent being the first one, agreements being the next one, everyone's always safe, everyone's always heard. But in order to do that, maybe you have to work on your relationship with that partner to make sure it is open communication, make sure it is actually a safe place. Because I would have thought that for years and years, but I don't think that we were emotionally articulating the depth of our experience with each other before that.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Yeah. I love all that. I see a similar journey exactly. What happened to you? Oprah, he describes like any trauma that, you know, that you went down is like a one-lane highway that I would describe like Mormonism and the path that you took. And then now you are on a multi-lane highway. And I'd say like you can integrate certain things that you like, but that's a trauma that's going to be there. It's going to dictate a lot of your past life. And now you are on your own road. Know that you don't have to be on that path anymore, on that lane anymore. You have something else that you're forging and creating and driving down. Just being confident that this is your path now and things will come. And it's not up to us to like dictate that. Like we're going to be talking about a lot about, you know, no new gurus and stuff. Like you're going to find out what works for you.
Well, and I actually really love how you said when we're moving down that road, we're having that realization that maybe it's not just Mormonism that's informed my sexual experience. It's society. Even the town that I grew up in, my sexual experience is informed by even like the traumas that I had, the non-consensual experiences that I had. My sex experience is because of Mormonism may not be 100% accurate just because you did not have the same roadblocks and walls that I had in connecting with your sexuality. And so there's a lot of things that define our own experiences in sex. And so I think it's completely a-okay for someone who is even a believing Mormon to have a really healthy conversation about sex with themselves, if they can pull away any of those shame aspects, if they can just pull back those pieces long enough to have a very deep, healthy conversation about their own sexuality within themselves. I think this is attainable for everybody, even within the spectrum of believing Mormonism. At least mm-hmm. I hope. That's my hope.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of these, it's beautiful. That was exactly awesome. And a lot of the questions I'm going to be asking you, I feel like with me, when I was answering these on my Instagram stories and with you, it's going to be like, see slide one, or like, go back to this, like, listen to that again, internalize a lot of these things, understand these concepts, because that's the framework for the next question that you're going to ask. So you might repeat yourself, but okay, if there's anything else you want to add to this. So how to spice up a post-Mormon vanilla sex life.
I think with that piece, again, since it is your own definition, it's really funny because in order to know that, I would have to know everything you've done sexually, what right. you think is cool, what you think is gross. Have you seen the Netflix show, How to Build a Sex Room?
Mm-mm.
Okay, that's homework before we talk again. Homework, How to Build a Sex Room. It's a beautiful conversation where she sits down with all the couples and she talks about kind of their sex languages and things that interest them and things that don't. So to say, how do we spice up our sex life? That's the assumption that your sex life is the exact same as my sex life, and that your definition of what vanilla is the same as my definition of vanilla. So it's funny because you could say, oh, well, I tried this toy, but maybe you tried that toy 3 years ago, or maybe you think that toy is super offensive. So to say, how do we spice it up? It's like, I don't know where your starting point and where your ending point is, mm-hmm. but I would just say, what is it that you are interested in? pick three things, sit down with each other and say, these are three things that interest me. These are three things that interest me. Then ask yourselves, why do we want to try it and how would it make us feel? Obviously, if there's any downsides, but then that way there's a conversation, and with conversation comes intimacy, and with intimacy comes better passion, better connection, and better openness to have those chocolate, or what is more than vanilla, to have those extra sexual experiences that you're asking to spice. You can have some cayenne if you really talk about it.
Beautiful. Exactly. But if we were to do just like a rapid fire, people's intentions are like, I want to know an X thing, fill in the blank, Faith and Kara, of what is something that when you were in your life, Faith, went from a more vanilla kind of stereotypical what sex is, wham, bam, thank you, man, missionary, whatever it is, to like trying one or two things. What do you think was healthy for you to introduce?
Okay.
If you want to answer this.
No,
it's too personal.
No, it's not. I mean, I was just trying to think of like what aspect of sex, because it's a very wide ranging. But I think that one thing that was actually really hard for me to do was discuss fantasy with my husband, because he would be like, so like, do you have any like desires or like fantasies? I'm like, nope. He's like, you don't have like anything that you've thought about, like maybe trying or doing? I'm like, no, we can do whatever you want. And he's like, I don't like, no, I want to know. Like, you can tell me. And I'm like, no, I don't want to tell you, because I was embarrassed, because I still held so much shame. I'm in my 30s and I'm talking to the person that I have sex with, but it was still like, I can't tell you. It's too much. And so I would say, if you have the ability in a sober state to discuss fantasy, that's a really great way to just start the conversation. Because when you start discussing fantasy, you're kind of discussing those little pieces of them that they find interesting, intriguing. It's something that you can kind of flirt with. You can kind of add into your everyday sex life, where maybe she finds like Bridgerton and maybe like a Bridgerton fantasy, or vampires or fairies, or like any of these little things. Like, you could send like a little fairy picture and just like, oh yeah, that's something that, it's something that is part of that precursor of sex, because there's the sex, but then to really intensify the spice, there's more of a storyline. There's more of an addition of. And so I feel, to me, sex is better when there's more of an intellectual aspect. But then if they're thinking like, I need to get to the place where I can even discuss it, I will be 110%. I have had very kind of sexual experiences where it's on my Instagram. I'm a plant medicine enthusiast, have a card. But there is times when I have had some vitamins and I feel so much more at ease just to say, okay, so this, and this. It's not that I wouldn't, it's nothing that I'm ashamed of, but it's something where I'm able to fully articulate and I'm able to put the focus into, this is why I like this fantasy. These are the pieces of it that I like. This is the part that I would like to play. This is the part that I would like you to play. And I feel like that has less to do with fear and actually more to do with my attentiveness, because I have very ADHD tendencies where I struggle with completely forming full sentences, to completely give in vulnerably to certain things, just because I have so many things that I'm holding on to at the same time. And so for me, that's also another vanilla way, I guess, if you're open to cannabis, but that's a vanilla way to be able to open those conversations about sex. And obviously, plant medicine, you're going to heighten physical experiences as well.
When I first heard that people get high on cannabis to have sex, I was like, I've heard of drunkenness before, definitely that. And I couldn't believe it, because I was like, aren't you just kind of wigging out and stuff? And, you know, I do think there is a, you know, different ways that people experience their highs. And some people are like, no, it's just, I'm too paranoid or whatever. But if it does fill you with a sense of like calmness or anxiety reduction and stuff, like that can really, at least for me, it can be really great at just reducing all of the thoughts of judgment or all those other things like the balls in the air that are always, oh, that's a bad example. just all of the different things that your mind wants to grasp when you're like, no, I just want to grasp one thing right now.
So and it allows you to expand even your focus within that one thing.
Right.
So you're able to kind of like think through more of, oh, and then this, and then this, and then, yeah, it's very helpful.
Mm-hmm.
But I also don't love to be drunk. I don't love to drink to the point of drunkenness. I have like autoimmune issues and stuff. So for me, that's not an enjoyable experience for me. So I would say from a safe vantage point, allowing safe substances could be a nice way to spice up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then that can, like you said, during and also just kind of to help you think about fantasies and to let your mind expand in other ways.
Yeah.
So that's what you're into. That's a good suggestion.
Yeah.
Another question that goes along with that. What is the worst thing regarding sexuality you were taught in the church?
I think that that's twofold. I think the worst thing for me regarding sexuality in the church was that it wasn't my own. That's like the most impactful.
It's kind of similar to my answer.
Yeah. I think the worst thing, period, is the sexuality piece and the shame that surrounds it. When it comes down to like my belief system and stuff, when you're talking about church, I feel like a lot of churches have a lot of good things that they talk about, and they have a lot of things that can be detrimental. And if you're thinking about it, all of us believe in stories. That's what dictates our belief system within the world. And so some churches believe in these stories. Some people believe more heavily in these stories. And so I like the stories that more people can experience a happy ever after. And so there's like different indigenous beliefs where there's multiple types of sexualities, and there's different types of religions where they allow more room for more sexual identity within the culture. And I love those types of stories. I love to believe in those types of stories because they allow for more happily ever afters throughout mm-hmm. society.
What I hear you saying is very similar to my answer, which even though I'm interviewing you, I'd love to read my answer I put on Instagram last night because it's part of the framework. It's just like, so much of the things that we're talking about is this new perceptions of what authority means mm-hmm. and being told for so long, you know, what boxes you're supposed to fill. And even when I was Mormon and I was very Christian, I was like, the God that I worshiped is a very humongous God. He can't be boxed. He's mysterious. There's so many things that I don't understand. So I was not as orthodox as some other Mormons. And so I feel like I remained semi unscathed by more of the more harmful teachings. And so now on the side of Mormonism, I comes across narcissistic, but I do kind of view myself as a god or a goddess or something that I can embody and envelop. And I am acting on behalf of that. So what I wrote is, the worst internalized teaching is that there's a God watching you. You are small. You live to serve this order and the system, as opposed to you are God. You are a goddess. Sexuality isn't taboo. Gross part of you. You are creativity, energy, love, mystery. You're not watched and shamed. You are the watcher. So what do you want to watch? A goddess doing goddess shit? Okay, say less. This is why I did DMT once and I've never been the same mm-hmm. since.
I love that.
So,
yeah.
Just kind of just.
You are the authority.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. This one I didn't even know how to answer. Some things are just not relatable. I don't know what to do. I'm a nobody. Just Faith, help me answer this. Somebody said, I can't look at my husband's penis. It gives me the ick. I have to keep my eyes closed and think about something else or some other fantasy to get.
I find that a fascinating question because I think, and we'll go into this next time, but with every avenue of sex I looked into, I had to ask myself, how is this making me feel and why? So I think in order to actually answer that question of, what do I do about not wanting to look at my husband's penis? It gives me the ick. I think you have to ask yourself more questions. Why is it giving you the ick? Is it from a place of fear? Is it because that is associated with, I don't love the sex? Is it physically abhorrent to you? Maybe it's a very different looking one. I don't know. Maybe it's a scary one. I feel like though, with this question, you have to ask yourself, why does it give you the ick? And if the answers lead to because of the person, because of the relationship, because I'm not safe with this penis, then that, I think that gives you where you need to go from there. If it is, I don't know what to do with this. I'm not good at sex. It's overwhelming. It's uncomfortable. It's scary to look at because I've been conditioned to be scared of it. Mm-hmm. I think that gives you another path forward. If it's, I don't like penises. I really, really love to look at vulvas and women. And I think that gives you a more obvious, I think that that question is the precursor to maybe 10 or 15 more questions that you should mm-hmm. ask yourself mm-hmm. about the ick, and not something that we could define just because our sex is different than questioner sex.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I think the only other thing is like, you know, that there's like 20 questions. Yeah. That I think you nailed it, that there's all these other different avenues of what does that mean on top of that. And I think a lot of women, when I was Mormon, I was in a Facebook group that was really popular about sexuality. I feel like I pretty much ran that group before I did this. I was just in there every day asking, answering, helping give resources and stuff. And
I got you.
And I think something else that came up pretty commonly is people talking about just being really surprised and grossed out by just like fluids and everything that has to do with sex that just isn't pretty and what you see in the movies. And so I think it's like helpful to deconstruct that it's not like a pretty package.
With my own personal experience, there would be lots of things that I would be like, oh, but what if this? What if this? Like when my husband and I were talking about, maybe we try this. What if we try this? What if we... And watching How to Build Your Sex Room on Netflix, there's a lot of fluids discussed. And we were able to have very open conversations about, yeah, I don't think I would like that. I don't think I would like this. A really good podcast to listen to that gives really good nuanced perspectives into sex is Dying for Sex. Hmm. That's a really, just because I won't give away the whole premise. Go listen to it. I think it's the second season. But it's a really interesting perspective into our various types of sex languages and sex identities. When you're talking about having sex with someone, obviously the sex I experience in a physical way is with my husband, and I love him. I love everything about him. We're very, very comfortable. And if you are in a state of vulnerability to that degree with that person, I hope that you feel comfortable with their fluids and with your fluids or whatever. But if that's a major ick, then speak to your love language. Always have a little kit next to your bed with towels, and speak to your comfort level. If that's honestly like, I don't like maple syrup touching my eggs, that is a major ick for me, total deal breaker. So I'm going to stand in my light and say, if there's maple syrup on my eggs, I don't want it. And so if you don't want the excess fluids, if you don't want like him to finish on you, make that a clear boundary and make the fluid aspect the best it can be, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And as we're going to be talking about discovering what your sexuality is, like just be open that things are adapting and can change. And you could, you know, like something that you could see as, you know, more risque. And then you might be like, I only really liked that because I thought I was supposed to like that.
Yeah.
So it can really swing all sorts of ways.
I just feel like to come full circle, it's so hard to talk about because we're afraid of shame. And I think the way to be less afraid of shame is to stop giving it power. Don't give your own self-judgment away to other people, because at the end of the day, you're the only one that gets to deal with the consequences of your decisions. So stop giving all of the power to everyone else about the way you see yourself sexually, personally, physically. It should be your story to tell in your own time and to define on your own terms.
Mm-hmm. Right on. And I just want to add to that, I never would have guessed how just held by the journey, I guess you could say, by the universe, all of this deconstruction work makes you feel. Like, you know, there's no God after this, you know, Mormon deconstruction. Where do you go find God? What is the authority? What am I supposed to do? And really taking back that authority for me comes in the form of just feeling really, really held and safe by a space that I've carved out myself, that I hope, you know, every listener can kind of feel that within themselves, that whatever this journey is, it's not going to be linear. It's going to mm-hmm. take you on all different kinds of places. and you're not always going to make the right choices, but like, well, if you can't get radically honest as you leave this high demand fundamentalist religion, I always ask, like, then what are we doing here? Like, let's continue to grow. Let's continue to ask questions, be radically honest, and know that no matter what happens, like, I've gone through way too much stuff to ever put in a podcast, but to be able to look back and be like, I'm so much happier and from questioning, from experimenting, from asking those questions instead of saying, like, those are too much of a Pandora's box for me to get into. Mm-hmm. It's like, at least I said that I went down some kind of journey. Nothing but a lot of love and self-respect for myself and my husband on this side of it, that we did that together.
Yeah, I love that.
What? Insightful me. No, yes. Just I've lived through some things. Faith, why is this episode important to you? Why did you want to come on and talk about this?
I love that question so much. And the reason why I love that question is it's the one that I've had to ask myself so many times. So you brought up the Mormon Stories episode that I did with John and Margie, and it was so much fun. But I had a lot of nerves going in, and then I recorded it, and I had a lot of people bring up things that I discussed, but I was honestly too scared to look back at it just because I was like, I'm just worried that I'll just take myself apart and I'll get in my head about all the things that I said and did. And so then I had to keep asking myself that question. Why is it so hard to talk about sex? Like, why is that something that I didn't want to look back on when it was something that I felt so strong about talking about? So then that question came into play again when I had people reach out to me after I shared that podcast, and close friends and people that were more peripheral and people that had just known me through social media, but they would something along the lines of, thank you so much for recording the podcast. I have a question about X, Y, and Z. I have a question about this. And then I've had some friends that surprised the hell out of me and said, look, I don't know where I lie on the faith spectrum, but what I do know is I need to understand my sex better. Explain the sex to me. And it always made me giggle because I have to think about my authority in this, right? Who are you to tell people anything about sex? Because, hi, I have imposter syndrome. And so 90% of the time I'm on top of the world. 90% of the time I feel really good about myself and my opinions. But then there's that 10% of the time where I have to talk down to myself and I have to ask, why does my opinion matter? And I guess I have to go back to, why is it so hard to talk about sex? I have a lot of friends who are still active Mormon, and I have a lot of family who are still active Mormon. And I think that you and I have kind of discussed that it's been several years since I kind of made my official exit, that my family and I made our official exit. But I think there's been a lot of healing and a lot of growth between our friends and between our family. The friends that were able to stick around, and it hurts to say that out loud. But I do want to speak from a respectful perspective while still honoring my own experience. And so that is to say, because I've had so many people come and say, hey, explain the sex to me, I don't really think that I'm an authority. I think that what I provide is a safe place. I feel like my whole journey, ever since coming to a place in my life when I was put at odds with every single belief I had instilled in me from birth, all I wanted at that moment in time was a safe place. Mm-hmm. And knowing that there was none, knowing that even looking at my husband, we weren't at a place where where I could have articulated that to him, and that we probably would have been okay after that. And so I think in this whole journey that I've experienced, I've wanted to come to a place of building bridges. And the reason why I want to build bridges is because when you've built a bridge and you found compromise and you've humanized the other person to see you as a person who holds value, to give your point of view a respect, that's when those bridges are built, and that's when that safe place is established. Because when you go even deeper, why is it so hard to talk about sex? Is because you fear what other people might think or what they might assume about you when you're talking about such a deeply vulnerable subject. Mm-hmm. So that comes down to our fear of what will people think. And the only reason why you would be worried about what other people are thinking is if you're worried about losing community and you're worried about losing friends. And I felt like at that moment in time, when my husband and I had made the decisions we had made, we lost our whole community. And even there was a distance that we felt from our closest family members. So after having experienced that and that deepest human need to want to have a belonging, to want to have connection with people, that's been my main pull, I think, in the world, is to establish a safe place. So when I'm saying, why is it so hard to talk about sex? I'm saying it's hard for me to talk about sex because I am a mom, because I've got three little kids, because I am a fitness instructor. So I work at your friendly neighborhood gym. And I always, always want to make sure that everyone who's in my presence feels safe, feels like they belong, and feels like they have a voice. And in taking a stance on something like sex, I would never want to alienate anyone or make anyone feel uncomfortable. That's why it's hard to talk about sex, is because we fear what other people think about us. When I say I've got three kids at home, I don't want my kids to be made fun of. I don't want, all because I want to help people find deeper connection to their vulnerable parts of themselves by safely asking questions about sex and their own sex identity. And I feel like when we're really talking about the biggest things we're fighting about in the world, we're still fighting about sex. We're fighting about abortion rights. We're fighting about who can have sex with who and who can have what parts where. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about it. Let's stop pretending that it is such a taboo subject and let's talk about it. Not in fear of what are all the PTA moms going to think about me, but in hopes of, yeah, let's talk about this because sex is something that we're all engaged in. There's children. They had to have come from somewhere. We're all engaged in sex in one way or another. So let's talk about it, but let's talk about it in a healthy way.
What kind of ideas from Mormonism or your background or patriarchy in general kind of informed your ideas before? And what themes and ideas and words and choices inform your movement and confidence through life now as a post-Mormon woman?
When I was in high school, I think it would be fair to characterize me as the molliest Mormon in all the land. Not only was it something that other people said about me, but it was something I said about myself. And I was like, oh my gosh, I would never do that because I am what they call a Molly Mormon. Like, I was very good at following rules. And I was very good at alienating and shaming people who did not follow the rules. That's something that I've had to pay a lot of penance for, I guess. I don't know how to say that. That's something that I've had a lot of regret for because I'm really good at following rules and I have a lot of deep-rooted perfectionism, scrupulosity. I was very obedient and I was very good at following the rules, but in following the rules, it felt at odds with where my gut was leading. Yeah, that was the time when I had to have a real, I guess, come to Jesus, for lack of a better term. About 5 years ago, I had a really, really hard time after my third baby was born. I had a lot of conflicts just with humanity. And at the time, it was really easy to kind of just be like, oh, it's postpartum depression. But there was much more to it than that. I was wrestling with my spot and my place in humanity and the story that was going to tell. I was starting to come to that perspective. And it was very difficult to talk with my husband about it at the time, just because our relationship was not where it is now. So you 5 or 6 years ago would have seen a very broken individual, but a very obedient and quiet individual. And then about 3 years ago, we kind of, after the world opened up again, started hanging out with friends and going dancing and finally needed to let my broken person find belonging and kind of put myself back together. Went through a lot of body image stuff, and that's its like own beast. If we want to talk about like what informed these two people before the person that I am today, I would have to talk about like authority. In my whole life, I've really, really good, again, perfectionism. I can follow rules like a boss. My fear going into sex had a lot to do with authority and making sure that I was pure and making sure that I was going by the letter of the law. And I was raised to be a lady. We didn't talk about sex. I didn't ever wear anything remotely inappropriate. Sex was sacred And so we didn't talk about sex to the extent of sex is a beautiful gift that we're given to express love to our partner. And so we can have babies. And that was really my basic understanding of sex. I talked a little bit in the other podcast that my first physical encounters with sex were not consensual. And so everything about sex is elusive, is scary, is secret, sacred, whatever you want to say. And I have fear of it. I have fear of being punished if I break a rule within the land of sex. And I fear the long-term consequences of sex. And I fear asking myself questions about my own sexuality because I don't know what that will lead to. It's safer just to follow the rules in the book that I was given. And so honestly, I would love to renew my vows with Brett. I would love to kind of like repromise ourselves to each other just because the people who got married are completely different from the people that we are today and the experience that we have today and even like our understanding of love for each other. And I floated that idea to my parents to see if it would be taken negatively or positively. And they were like, yeah, just tell us when we want to be there. That sounds amazing. And so I think there's a lot of stretching and it's beautiful.
Beautiful answer. I want to talk more about judgments as well. I had a therapist say to me once that a bird can land on your head, but it's up to you to decide if it can make a nest on there or not. And that is so helpful to me when I think of kind of internalizing judgments and questioning if this is like really true for me. And it's really serving. And that's, you know, when things come up, if you like something sexually, obviously, but also when it comes to judgments that are just kind of reoccurring themes. And I think we've hit on so many things that are really part and parcel to so many people's upbringing, whether it's, you know, body issues and shame and judgment about what you are and aren't allowed to do. So somebody might be listening to this and they say, Nuanco, Faith, you guys seem like you have the whole sex thing in the bag. And all I can say is, I think we're both people who understand life as a journey and we know things are not always going to be linear. And so I want to make sure that people also get the understanding that like through your whole deconstruction, through everything that you kind of experience in life, have a lot of grace for yourself, have a lot of cringe, know that you're going to be kind of trudging up a new mountain, but it's something that you're going to be building and fortifying and growing that's your own. So it's worth it, but doesn't mean that we have all the answers or that we just like woke up enlightened one day. And so what has this journey kind of been like for you? Has it been, you know, a rigmarole of, you know, aha moments and then, you know, two steps forward, one step back? You have any stories that you want to share?
Yeah, I think it is. Like you just said, it isn't a linear thing when it comes to healing and when it comes to having these honest conversations about sex with yourself, especially when you have a partner involved. It is very nonlinear. Just because when I keep saying your sexual identity and your personal identity are so intertwined, it's because that's exactly what I mean. My personality and my identity is so informed by this. And so obviously the way I'm showing up for my partner is going to be so informed by my ability to connect with my own sexual identity, my ability to connect with my sexual expression. And it's important that going back to that agreement piece of that morality thing, with my agreements with my husband, I needed to make sure that all of the steps that I was taking within this defining of sexuality were something that he was also comfortable with without giving up my own authority. So doing that dance is super complicated just because I didn't ever want to go to him like, you're the man of the house, laid out. Because I felt like that was our whole sexual experience thus far. And it wasn't the full sex experience that either of us wanted because I was scared of having a sexual identity. And so I basically just, most sex experiences that we had, I had him lead out and we went to whatever he wanted to do. And then that was kind of my sex because I didn't look at porn. I didn't even read dirty books because I just figured the sex secrets would come to me physically. And I would never say that our sex was bad sex. It was never unenjoyable. But the places that we have been able to expand our connection to now is 10 times where we were then. And I'll be honest, yes, me informing my own sexual identity, but because I was doing that and I was leading out with that, I felt like it gave Brett more permission to connect with within his own identity. There's a big conversation about our masculine and feminine and the different percentages of masculine and feminine that inform who we are as a person, but then also our sexual expression and stuff. And I think being able to have that conversation with one another, that sort of experimentation, exploration, mm-hmm. without holding any shame, was a very vulnerable but connecting thing for both of us. I didn't just wake up and I'm like, I'm the professional on all the sex things. It's a very nonlinear thing because we are still evolving, because not only are the personalities that we have still evolving, our relationships with one another are still evolving. I guess I'll discuss this now. For Brett and I, monogamy was the only thing on the table for us within this sexual expression. As that self-confidence grows, it's not always positive. And there's a lot of problems that come about because of that. And so I feel like my relationship with Brett now is the best it's ever been, but it's because we've been through some seriously crazy stuff.
Mm-hmm. That's all really vulnerable. So thank you for getting into that. I wanted to ask something that I would have never considered, I guess, when I kind of put my Mormon cap on, is when you're talking about like a sexual identity. Mm-hmm. Because so much of us girls, we grow up, yes, kind of feeling like, you know, our sexuality is something we don't talk about. And it's this present that your husband kind of gets to unwrap on your wedding night. And a really damaging teaching, I think, in a lot of patriarchal religions, especially in Mormonism, is this idea that your sexuality kind of only exists in the bedroom in these intimate moments. That's kind of, you know, lorded over by your husband to be, you know, something that is a gift that you give them. It's not an identity that you hold yourself independent from them. Masturbation is not allowed. You can't have like personal sexual experiences to kind of like touch yourself, feel, you know, the sensations without any other judgments or somebody else coming in. So sexual identity overall would have been kind of a foreign concept to me, mm-hmm. when I was Mormon. I would have thought you meant like sexual identity is like my orientation is this or that. But what do you mean by like a sexual identity?
All of it wraps into sexual identity. So I think that when I say your sexuality is yours and it's going to be given to you, it's like, oh my gosh, I don't know what to do with all of this because there's so many unopened boxes. It's very easy to shut all those boxes and be like, oh, that's too scary. I can't handle it. I think that maybe we don't need to do this. And I'm just going to keep going status quo because that's where we are. I think that you need to stay in that place as long as it makes sense to stay in that place. But you're eventually going to get to a place where you have a wider ranging understanding that your sexual identity is also going to be connected into your understanding of humanity. And your understanding of humanity is going to inform your political decisions, is going to inform where your money goes, is going to inform the way that you tell your children's stories, because the way you tell your children's stories is how you're informing their perspective on the world.
Right on.
So when I had that realization that my sex identity was not just about me, it's also about the way I show up in the world and the legend that is mine, I need to understand exactly who I am and what I am, what I want and why. So then when you come back to that basically Pandora's box that's just been handed to you, no, it's your sexuality and you need to decide what to do with it. I decided that there was a lot more responsibility there. There was a lot more control there than I had ever given myself credit for. And that's super intimidating. However, if you give yourself grace, if you move forward with intention, truly letting yourself be at ease with those things, I can honestly say that you will love people more.
Yeah.
Not because you want to have sex with everybody, but because your ability to look within your own nuances helps inform your ability to see other people in the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is mic drop of all mic drops, honestly, Faith. Yeah, that's it. And I was going to kind of ask a question in the middle of that, but you kind of already answered it because I don't want to have that be missed by anybody, is what I really feel like so much of this deconstruction from Mormonism is all about was articulated by my friend Eve. I kind of deconstructed with her in live time with John Dillon. And when we did like a 1-year update, she said that when she left Mormonism, she felt like she was, you know, at one point, like, it kind of sucks because you're not like special anymore. You don't have this, but then also like a breath of relief that you just get to be part of humanity again. She felt like she was joining humanity. And I don't know if you felt like that as well. And because what I'm hearing from you is this wisdom in putting down the judgments for yourself and for others, because you really recognize like how much you don't know. And when you can put down those judgments, you're able to kind of play in that space. And what I hear from you is just a lot of wisdom in being able to incorporate all of the things that you don't know yet, all of the novel things that you're excited to discover about yourself, about your partner, and about other people in a non-sexual way, because that's what humanity is. You're joining something that is interesting and novel and open for exploration. And if you hold judgments within yourself, you know, that pedestalization that we come from in Mormonism is often, you know, for somebody else's benefit, but not actually for our own.
Yeah.
We're not actually able to engage with humanity in an empathetic, loving way.
I love that. Okay, the way that I would go with that is, okay, so one of the scariest questions, because going back to the only reason why we would care what other people think, when it's going back to why is it so hard to talk about sex, the only reason why we would care is we're afraid to lose connection. We don't want to be alone. And I know there's so many people that are like, no, I'm okay with being alone. But just even at the aspect of being able to go buy milk, like we do like to connect with other people in humanity, and we love to be heard. The whole reason why I'm doing this podcast is because so many people said, oh my gosh, I'm so glad that you recorded that because it made me feel less alone in the world.
Amazing.
Yeah. And so when we're looking at this from that big picture point of view, if everything we're doing as we're walking through this life is in hopes of finding belonging and connection with other people, it's only at the degrees in which we allow them to connect and in the degrees in which we desire to connect with them.
Right.
So we have our friends and our community and the people that make up that. We have our deeply close friends that are the ones that we go to when we're stressed, when we're hurt, when we're broken, when we're at the very vulnerable pieces of our life that actually make us who we are, right? We are only, our story is defined by the challenges that we overcome and the stories that people tell about us. So when I thought about that, that geez, this all feels like a big long journey of wanting to seek and find connection. And sex is the deepest intimate connection. Sometimes it is just physical. Sometimes you just need to connect with someone else physically in the world. But much of the time, and I hope more of the time, it is a passionate, cosmic, beautiful connection that you're having, not only with others, but your sense of self, like that you're also able to find pleasure and find beauty and find magic within your relationship with yourself. Our conversations with sex, the only way we can talk about it with each other is if we talk about it with ourselves first.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we need to talk about sex.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I think we can end it there. Like, I didn't even ask you to wrap up, but I'm like, that's everything. That's everything.
Bring a full circle.
Yeah, girl. Absolutely love that. Thank you for opening up about all of that, and hope that people have got some, you know, good tips and guidelines to kind of move through the world with.
I think that's a good spot to leave it, but I do appreciate you having me on. I love the comfort and the safe place that you provide here. So thank you. Thank you.
Thanks. I try. This podcast, The Mormon History Hoedown, is available anywhere you get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify. Thank you so much to my donors. I am a nonprofit now, so it means so much that I'm able to do this content and feel secure that I have donors coming in. So they move in and out of the space, and sometimes they lose donors. So if you appreciate this YouTube channel and this podcast, please hit the links down below, whether it's my Venmo. Make sure that you're subscribed to this channel. I'm trying to get to 100,000 subscribers. I really want to put a plaque behind me. Another great way to support this channel and get some premium and exclusive content and a little bit more community is over on my patreon.com/nuanceho. Hotown over there is awesome. Anything you can do is just comment for the algorithm and leave a thumbs up. Thank you so much, Faith, for joining me on this journey into embracing and reclaiming our sexuality. And I'll see you guys on the next episode of the Mormon History Hoedown. Love you so much. Bye.